system where once a region's hospital capacity for new patients drops below 15%, the region will be on a mandatory lockdown, with exceptions for essential workers, of course. The state has been divided into five regions: Southern California, San Joaquin Valley, the Bay Area, Northern California, and Greater Sacramento. Greater Sacramento is the region that Butte County, Sierra County, Sutter County, and many of the Sacramento Valley counties are in. But north of Butte and Amador County, like Tehama County, for example, is considered the Northern California region, all the way to the Pacific Ocean. Fortunately, right now, the ICU capacity is around 20%, so we are not under mandatory lockdown here in Butte. But if we aren't careful and our relatively small hospital capacity gets filled up, we are only 5% away from being put under that lockdown, which I know no one wants. So let's just keep being vigilant with our mask wearing and social distancing and not gathering in large groups, especially indoors. And hopefully our area will remain open. Hoping you have a happy and safe holiday season. I'm Matt Fidler for KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico.
Hi, this is Dr. Gail, and we're listening to KZFR Radio 90.1, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Just so you know, the opinions voiced on this program don't necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And let me thank the people who make this possible. Ask Dr. Gale is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsof.art. Ask Dr. Gale is also made possible by Dalmere Insurance Agency, an independent agent and real estate broker since 1948. Whew. Dalmere Insurance provides a range of coverage options, from home and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. You can reach Dalmere Insurance in Chico at 342-6421 and in Oroville at 533-3424 or at chicoinsurance.com. Ask Dr. Gale is also made possible by the generous contributions of the Downtown Chico Business Association, presenting Chico's online marketplace, where you can shop local and support our downtown businesses. There are over 32 retail shops and 50 restaurants just a click away. To safely shop this holiday season, visit shopdowntownchico.com, also on Facebook. Thanks for keeping it local, and happy holidays from the Chico Downtown Online Marketplace. Ask Dr. Gale, which is on the second Thursday of each month from 6 to 7, is also made possible by Sativa Art Glass Studio, creating art glass since 1977. Due to virus safety, the gallery's closed till restrictions are lifted. Online orders and information are available at sativa.com. That's S-A-T-A-V-A. So I was going to share with you an interview with Anne Osborne, who's an energy worker in Ontario, Canada. But I can't make the mouse work to bring her up. So I'm going to talk about ways to stay grounded and centered during a difficult time like we're facing. So a really basic grounding technique is to think of a huge taproot, like from a big redwood tree deep in the earth, and that's at the base of your spine into the earth, wide as your hips. And when you're feeling a little anxious or worried about the pandemic and whether Trump is going to leave and whether 17 states are losing their minds and supporting the Texas suit to go to the Supreme Court, they hope to overturn the election for four swing states. This will really help. So you just think ground, nice deep breath, and release any tension or worry down the grounding pipe into the earth to recycle. And I can explain to you why this works so you have a little faith in it. The evidence that thought manifests physically are numerous. To me, one of the most convincing is people with multiple personalities called dissociative identity disorder. They're called alters. And when one alter is prominent, the person could have diabetes. When another alter is running the show, no diabetes. One alter could be sensitive to certain medications and the other not. One could need glasses and the other not. So the idea that just personality can have such a huge effect on your physical health is worth thinking about. But that's not the only bit of evidence. The other is, for a long time, researchers have dismissed placebo effect. Oh, it's just placebo effect. But when you think about it, it's really powerful, because what it means is 30% of the time, the little sugar pill is just as effective as the pharmaceutical drug that they're testing. There's a professor at Harvard named Ted Kapichuk, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, who's been doing research on placebo. And what he found is, even if you tell someone, this is a little sugar pill, but it's helped other people to get better, to feel better, it has efficacy. And other people have found if you give someone a big red pill, then it has more efficacy than maybe a little white pill. So how it looks can have impact. Another evidence of the power of thought over the physical is hypnosis. So stage hypnotherapists would tell someone, the subject that's under hypnosis, I don't know if they really did this on the stage, but this kind of thing has happened. I'm going to put a cigarette on your wrist, and they put a pencil tip, and the person gets a blister. So even though it's a pencil tip, the body says, oh, he told me or she told me it was a cigarette, so I guess I better prepare and get a blister. And then there's really good research, thousands of studies where just with intention in laboratories, the experimenters say, like to the yeast, released more oxygen. And it does. And they say, yeast, I intend that you release less. And it does. They've done this with cell growth, all kinds of things. And there's been a lot of experiments on plants. Like, I've just finished a trilogy of books called The Mysteries of Reality, The Mysteries of Healing, The Mysteries of Knowledge Beyond Our Senses, based on interviews with 65 visionary physicians and scientists from 8 different countries. And if you're interested in that, some of the interviews are on my YouTube channel. They're really fascinating. One of my interviewees is the Nobel Prize winner in physics. And I had fun kind of debating with him. Like, oh, my gosh, I'm having these email debates with the Nobel Prize winner in physics. But one of the interviewees is a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, and Dr. Modell. And what he did he taught a class where students could experiment with these kind of power of thought, intention kind of experiments. And one of the students did an experiment with little plant growth. You know, they grew seeds and measured the growth of the seedlings. And so they had three different groups. One group was just treated like the others, watered, you know, taken care of. And the other group was sent love and appreciation. Oh, this beautiful grass. It looks so gorgeous. We love this grass. And then Dr. Modell said one of the students who did the researchers was a great swearer. He was very profane. And he would get out his little swear sample, and he would cuss at them and ring them up and down and tell them how terrible they were as little seedlings, and, you know, swear every kind of profane word he could. And as you would expect, those poor little seedlings didn't do as well, even though they got the same amount of water and sunlight and that kind of thing. So those are a few examples. If you get really interested, Dean Radin is a head scientist at the Institute of Noetic Sciences in Marin County, which was founded by the astronaut Edgar Mitchell. When he was in space, he kind of had an epiphany about the need to go into our inner spiritual knowing. And the Institute of Noetic Sciences is doing really interesting webinars that are free just about every Friday at 10 o'clock. So if you look at IONS, you can online, you can see their calendar and see if you're interested. And Dean Radin has written a lot of books, and he just gives evidence after evidence after evidence that thought has power. And then another way of looking at this is that our common sense only pertains to the large physical world. The quantum world, common sense doesn't work. So as you know, quantum mechanics, quantum physics has to do with the tiny, the molecule, the photon, the electron, the quark, really, the really small things that we can't see with our eyes. And what quantum physicists teach us is there's an information field that connects everything. And probably the most specific evidence of that is a quantum non-locality. So what that means is if you have, let's say, two electrons, and they are paired, moving around a nucleus. So the physics term is they become entangled. So it's just like we become entangled with our family, with our friends, with people that we work with. And so there's more connection. Okay, so if we take one of these electrons and we send it off to Peru or another galaxy, doesn't matter. And once they're entangled, if you change the properties of one electron, the other one changes in response. So if you change the spin on one, the other one changes as well. And the interesting thing about it is there's no time lag. So it's not like a wave function. They're not communicating through some kind of frequency or wave. They act as if they're one, even if they're separate. And the idea is that everything is connected with degrees of entanglement, and that the universe is a sea of information. So we all exist in this sea of information. And so that's what allows things like telepathy or prayer, healing from a distance, or clairvoyance, those kind of things. That this sea of information enables that kind of communication. So the interesting thing is quantum physicists in general don't really know what this is, this information field. And that ties into the fact that the universe is 95% dark energy and dark matter that we don't know very much about. We only know pretty much about 5% of the universe that we can see, and, you know, with our ocular vision. So the reason that we can use the power of thought is because we exist in this information field. And that's explained in some of the books in the trilogy. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Ask Dr. Gale, and we're at FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio. And what I'm talking about is that we can, in hard times like we're going through, that we can use the power of thought to stay grounded and centered. And if you want to read or learn more about it, there's the trilogy, there's my book, Essential Energy Tools, How to Develop Your Clairvoyant and Healing Abilities. There's the free YouTube interviews with visionary scientists. And as a footnote, also on that YouTube channel are some of my previous shows with panels when we could have people in the studio in the good old days before the plague, and also a series of interviews with girl and young women climate activists. So a book that I've just finished is called Climate Girls Saving Our World. And these are amazing young women that I interviewed in 31 countries, 54 girls and young women. And I think we can really have faith in Generation Z, who are so concerned about our planet and really very democratic. They don't make distinctions based on our color or background or gender or sexual preference or whatever it is, orientation. Take a look at the YouTube channel if you have time and interest. Another really useful visualization which harnesses the power of thought, which I hope I've convinced you does have efficacy on physical matter, is to be centered. So let's do the visualization to be centered. You think, be behind your eyes, be in the center of your head, and imagine creating a room. Clearly, this is an imaginary room because we don't really have them in our little fatty, interesting brains in our skull. So in this room, you can create windows. And I would like to be looking at dolphins off the coast of Maui, whales coming to give birth to baby whales, calves, and maybe a mountain meadow with wildflowers and a creek, waterfall, that kind of thing. Well, whatever you want to be looking at, you can create the views out of the imaginary windows. And then you can make sure that nobody is there but you, and you can decorate the room like you want or don't want anything in there. But the kind of principles are that nobody should be there but you and nothing that you don't put. And then the one thing that is in the room is a chair or a throne. And you imagine being in that chair, sitting in it. And the reason that is centering is it aligns you with the sixth chakra. And the sixth chakra, people call it the third eye. It sits behind the eyebrows. And it's a very neutral and clear seeing chakra. It's kind of the center of our clairvoyance, which is the French clear seeing, clairvoyance. And so doing that visual aligns you with the sixth chakra. Many people go through life aligned in their second chakra, which is emotional and reactive. It's a, oh no, oh, what's now? You know, that kind of reactive feeling can come from the sensing second chakra, or being overly sympathetic rather than empathetic, operating from the heart chakra, the fourth chakra. So when you're feeling a little overwhelmed, you can think, deep breath, long exhalation, because a long exhalation calms the parasympathetic nervous system. And you think, ground, create a grounding pipe, widen my hips, deepen the earth, and let the grounding pipe release anything that's worrying you, making you anxious, concerned, whatever. Just breathe it down your grounding pipe. I'm doing a webinar with these kind of tools January 9th and 10th. And I did one a few weeks ago with people from around the world. And it was really, it was the first time I'd done clairvoyant reading online. You know, I've done it on the phone a lot and obviously in person. But it really proved to me that there's no time, no space, because I could read the people in the webinar and give them feedback on their tools, their visualizations, just as well if I was in person. So that was another kind of example to me of no time, no space. We live in a non-local kind of universe. It's interesting. Then another kind of visualization is if you're around people, not that we're around that many people, but you might be, you imagine roses all the way around your field. Like you imagine that you have a bubble of like a rainbow of colors around you, your physical body, like an egg-shaped bubble. Barbara Brennan worked for NASA as a scientist, and she's written books and started a healing center that some people in town have been to. And she had, you know, special kind of vision where she could see these kind of energy fields. And she, in one of her books, draws the layers of the energy field that people call the aura or the biofield. And then Carillion photography, a special kind of photography, was developed in Russia. They were able to photograph with the special equipment the layers of the aura, and they said, yeah, the way she drew it was really accurate. So to protect this kind of beautiful energy field, you can think of roses facing out, and the idea is they capture people's energy fields. And I mean, people's energy coming at you, and absorb it and keep it from going into your energy field. And then when they feel kind of full up, you blow them up, like with fireworks. And then that clears the space. So in workshops, we'll look at people's uses of roses, and a lot of times we'll see that they don't have full boundaries all the way around them. There's areas where there aren't these kind of symbols of a defined field that we call as roses. But it doesn't have to be roses. So I've worked with little kids who use catcher's mitts. Or I was doing a phone session with a surfer in LA, and he wanted sea sponges. So whatever works, you imagine that you're energy field, your energy bubble is being surrounded by whatever you like, roses, sea sponges, or catcher's mitts. And then they define, they absorb, and then you blow them up. And if something is bothering you and there's nothing you can do about it, you can imagine putting it in a rose out in front of you and blow it up. So your neighbor's dog is barking. You try grounding the dog. That doesn't work. There's nothing you can do. The neighbors aren't home to bring it in. You can put your irritation in a rose, blow it up, put it in the rose, blow it up. And if that doesn't work, I put it in the rose and imagine it going down the stem into the earth to recycle. And that usually works for me. If I can't take action, if there's nothing I can do, then I let it go down the grounding pipe. Another really useful tool that I always used after changing, moving energy around, clearing, is you imagine a gold sun. So you imagine a sun, S-U-N, over your head, and you fill it with amusement at how human beings learn. And think of Shakespeare said, it's like we're on a stage acting out our dramas together. And then you imagine good health, serenity, finding the kind of job that is best for you, whatever is up for you. And then that gold sun gets so big, so juicy and wonderful. We take a nice deep breath. It opens up. It comes down through your head, your neck, across your shoulders, down your arms, fills your torso and all that's in it. Gravity takes it down through your abdominal cavity, down through your thighs, knees, calves, and feet. So that's a good one to use like mid-afternoon if you're a little draggy. You think, oh, I better put up a gold sun, lots of vibrant energy, clarity, joy, good health, strong immune system, and let that gold sun come all the way in through the top of your head, down to your feet. So just to review, the evidence is that thought has power over matter. Lots of studies. One of the most frequent studies is called the Ganzfeld. And what they do is they put one person in a room in a very relaxed space, white noise, eyes covered with like little ping pong ball halves, headphones, very relaxed. And then they have another person who picks an image. Let's say it's an image of a dog chasing a ball. And then the person who's the sender sends dog chasing a ball, dog chasing a ball. And then the person in the Ganzfeld room is shown four pictures or four video clips and picks the one that they think was sent to them. And then the success rate, if it was just probability, would of course be 25%. But the Ganzfeld are usually like 33%. So the statistical differences aren't huge, but the fact that there's any very consistent effect shows that thought, intention really does affect matter. And it's fascinating because some of these studies found that Juilliard music students, I think that's right, that they had like 60% efficacy in picking the right image. So people with different talents and abilities have different ways of doing this. Another example of the research showing that there's no time, no space is remote viewing. And what this was is that during the Cold War with the Soviet Union, the U.S. government paid for remote viewers to find out what was going on in the Soviet Union. And they would just be given a number like 84642. And then they would draw what their hands, you might say, told them to draw. And they drew things like a huge submarine that was going to be produced and revealed by Russia, by the Soviet Union. And the CIA or they were working with said, oh, no, that's not possible. No one has submarines that large. But a few months later, that sub was delivered into the ocean and was just what the remote viewer had drawn. And they drew like underground missile silos and that kind of thing. One of the people that I interviewed for the Visionary Scientist trilogy, Charles Tart, who was a professor at UC Davis, he learned about what the remote viewers were doing because they were headquartered in the Bay Area and in Stanford. And so they said, okay, Charlie, let's try it out. And he didn't think he could do remote viewing. But the way they did it then is the person who was not the viewer would go to a location. And so Charlie Tart drew whirling white machines in kind of rectangular machines. And it turned out that they went to a laundromat. So he drew the washing machines. And so that made him really think there was something to it. The really interesting thing about remote viewing is that people who were good at it could draw the target before it was even selected by a computer. So they would give him the number, the 4862, whatever, and they would draw it. And then later, the computer would select it, the target, and they would have drawn it. So what that means is our notion of time as an arrow is totally false. Time isn't an arrow. It's kind of a circle. And the past bleeds into the future and the future into the past and that kind of thing. Another example of that is Dean Radin, who I mentioned before, did an experiment where he would hook us up, his subjects, to all kinds of body measurement, you know, pulse, blood pressure, skin conductivity, whatever they do to measure your reactiveness. And then he would show us slides. And the computer would generate the slides, not a person. And what Radin found is that people reacted to the scary or sexual slides a few seconds before they were even selected or displayed. So if you've heard about people who had a premonition, oh, I shouldn't go on that trip, on that airplane or something, and then it crashed, they're able to read into the from the future, which is a fascinating idea. And it's based in quantum physics. Time is relative, as Einstein said. And then I'm thinking about an Israeli study that I'll tell you about in a minute. If you're just joining in, this is Ask Dr. Gail Kimball, and the show is an interview show that is on the first Thursday of each month, but I can't find my interview on the screen, so I am doing my own little rap here. So this Israeli study, what they did is they took people who were hospitalized a decade earlier with the same kind of illness, and half of them were prayed for and the other half not prayed for, just left alone. And the ones that were prayed for had better health outcomes, even though they were prayed for 10 years after they were hospitalized. And what people say about that study is there weren't enough people, the sample size wasn't big enough to be anything you could consider scientific, but it is really interesting. Another kind of phenomenon that shows that our common sense views of time, space, reality aren't true is children who remember their past lives. The University of Virginia, their Division of Perceptual Studies, their physicians, mostly physicians. And Ian Stevenson started it all out studying children who remember their past lives. And they've studied over 2,500 children. They've studied them in India, you know, where it's more acceptable to remember your past lives, in the U.S., in Iran. And what they found is about two-thirds of the kids who remembered their past lives had birthmarks or some kind of body evidence, you know, like if they were killed and a bullet went through the one shoulder and out the back, they'd have birthmarks where the bullet holes had entered, that kind of thing. Or, you know, if they were hung, they had something anomalous around their their neck. So the other thing about the kids that surprised me is that they only had about 4.5 or 5 years in between their two lives, the life that was where they were kids here and their previous life. And I think that was because most of them had, you know, they were shot or hung or in an accident or that kind of thing. So an example is one little boy remembered being a fighter pilot in World War II. And he remembered his name, which was James, and he said he was the third James because he was James Jr., and then there was another James in his family. He remembered the name of the plane. He remembered the name of the co-pilot and where they were shot down. And there's no way this little boy could have remembered all that. The other thing about the University of Virginia studies of kids with past lives found is that the kids would forget around age 7 or 8. So they would have these vivid memories when they were old enough to convey them, and then they started to forget. But it seemed that their lives previously were cut short, and they wanted to come back and complete things and that kind of thing. So I'm thinking about, we do community energy balancing every Wednesday, and I had someone come in who's really pretty anxious, and nothing in this lifetime seemed to explain it. So when there's something like a big phobia with no explanation or some kind of issue, it's some people find it useful to look at past lives. And even if you think you don't believe in it, you might want to look at the University of Virginia studies, which are very carefully done. And when I looked at this young woman, what came up is a lifetime in Rome in the days of the Colosseum, you know, when they would have the gladiators fight each other to the death for the entertainment of the sadomasochistic people in the stadiums watching them. And she had a lifetime with that kind of treatment. And so in this lifetime, she waited a long time to come back in. She wasn't a 4-year returnee. So I assume she wanted to overcome that fear that was generated from the previous life. If you want to learn more about this, Brian Weiss is... I think he's a therapist. I'm not sure what is. I think he's a PhD psychologist, but I'm not sure. But he writes books about doing past life regression, and he'll talk about, you know, someone comes to him who is phobic about water, and then they discover that the person drowned in a past life, and then that allows the phobia to be brought to the surface and relaxed and healed. If you're interested in the kind of specific techniques that we've talked about, take a look at Calm, How to Thrive in Challenging Times, and Calm Parents and Children, a guidebook, which are available as print books and as e-books, because they have these kind of specific techniques. Another kind of useful book for kids, I have a meditation CD for kids called Kids Mind Power that does these kind of tools with fun music for kids, and a book called Answer to Kids' Deep Questions in Photos. So I'll give you some examples. The question, what is happiness and how can I be happier? And then the photograph is a glass of water half full and first grader's drawings of one of the students sharing with another student. So what I wrote is, happiness is a state of mind that can affect your emotions and well-being, and you can decide what to think. When you look at the glass, is it half full or half empty? Learn to think of things in a positive way, replacing negative thoughts with positive ones. When we help others or thank them for their kindness, we spread happiness. Help others, like this 6-year-old who drew the picture of a classmate lending tools to a friend. Learning is enjoyable, as is achieving a goal. Spending time with people and pets you love can be fun. What else makes you happy or makes you smile? And then another example of a question in the Kids Deep Questions Answered in Photos is, I have a photograph of a homeless family that I took in Rio de Janeiro. It's a mom and two kids on the street on a mattress, kind of without shelter. And the answer is, humans have only been on the planet for about 300,000 to 400,000 years, which seems like a long time, but the Earth is about 4.5 billion years old. If we look at the history of the Earth as a 24-hour clock, humans have been here only for a few seconds. We only developed language about 50,000 years ago, as explained by the Khan Academy, K-H-A-N. We are still learning to be unselfish and peaceful. And that, if you have different answers, I'd love to hear them. You can always communicate with me at gkimble@csuchico.edu. Kind of the same line, why is there so much unfairness in the world? And I show a photo of a school I visited in Tanzania where the kids were 4 to a bench, no books, openings for windows, but no glass in the windows. The only thing in the room was a really scratched up blackboard, and they had little like blue books that we used to take exams in college. They had little blue books to write their tests in. And then next to it is a picture that I took in Switzerland of a middle school with kids with all, you know, computers and all kinds of equipment and obviously glass in their windows. So why is there so much unfairness in the world? The photos below show a school I visit in Tanzania where the students sit 4 to a bench with no special learning tools, not even books. In contrast, the school in Switzerland has computers and musical instruments. Humans and our civilizations are slowly evolving from fighting for food and killing rivals in aggressive ways. Although, I must say as a footnote, the bonobos aren't aggressive in that way. They just solve everything with sex. To forming alliances and helping each other survive. Hundreds of thousands of years of human existence sounds like a lot, but it's not much when you realize the first living cell emerged about 3.8 billion years ago. We're still learning to be loving and kind to each other. And then I have a picture of a boy next to the unicorn at Caper Acres. Some of you probably know that. Why are there so many stories about unicorns if they're not real? Smart people like Dr. Carl Jung and Joseph Campbell have written about how we learn so much from stories and myths that create pictures in our mind that are richer than just facts and numbers. Unicorns are a symbol of power and mystery, just like Santa Claus is a symbol of joy in giving, or the Easter Bunny is a symbol of new life in springtime. Then I have a picture of a duck who came into my yard, and next to a real duck, a mallard drake. And then I have in the picture a duck windmill, you know, a little wind blower thing, whatever you call it, and a duck who is a decoy, a wood decoy that that hunters use. So I took a picture of the real duck standing next to the other duck. And so what's the answer to the question of what's real, what's the real duck? There's a video that that would be really informative. I don't know if you've seen it, but that if you go to www.theinvisiblegorilla.com/videos.html, if you'll see why this is interesting after you watch. Just to tell you what happens in the video, if you haven't seen it, is there's two teams playing basketball, and you're instructed to keep your eye on the basketball, and one set of the teams, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what we're supposed to look at. But what happens is, in the middle of the game, somebody in this big gorilla suit walks in. And I know when I saw this at a conference, I didn't see it because I was focused on the ball or whatever I was supposed to be looking at in this video. So and that's typical. If you might want to look at it and see, well, now you'll know it, now you'll see it, but have somebody else look at it and see if they see the gorilla. So the point is, it's really selective what we choose to see or how our brains see. Einstein said, it's the theory that decides what we can observe. When we see something, reflected light waves go to light receptors in the retina of the eye and then to the optic nerve to send the message to the brain. People who are colorblind will see colors differently than you. Some birds and fish can see shorter wavelengths that we can't see. People who see a car accident or crime may remember it very differently. People used to believe that the Earth was the center of the solar system and the Earth was flat, like a disc rather than round. Until the 19th century, doctors didn't know they should wash their hands before and after working with a patient. Our bodies look solid, but are mostly empty space because the atoms that make up our body are 99% empty space. The Earth seems to be very still, but the Earth rotates, giving us night and day. Just because we think we can see something doesn't mean it's real. That's something to really think about, how much of our lives are governed by our biases, our perceptions, our beliefs, and that kind of thing. There's kind of an apocryphal story, I don't know if it's true, that when Spanish galleons came to bays in South America, the indigenous people didn't see them because they had never seen sailing ships. It didn't compute. I don't know if that's true, but that's definitely a story. But the point is, we can shape how we perceive. So if we look at the glass as half full rather than half empty, then it really changes things. If we look at mistakes as ways to learn rather than beating ourselves up, then they can be very useful. So I know for me, whenever I make a mistake, I think, oh, okay, I learned something. I hopefully won't do that again. And it's a lesson. So life is a series of mistakes that we don't need to beat ourselves up for. We just learn. Just like a little baby, when it's learning to walk, it falls down a lot, and it just gets up, and eventually we learn to walk. So another question in Answers to Kids' Deep Questions in Photos is, what's the purpose of life? And the picture is a mushroom, the top and the bottom, on some bark. We're here to evolve, like all of nature is evolving, to help others and to enjoy the creation. Creativity is all around us. Look at this amazing mushroom growing on a log. That's another kind of interesting example of how little we know. The mushroom, the world of the tendrils of networks underneath all the trees in a forest. The video documentary Fantastic Fungi, if you haven't seen it, you really would enjoy it, I think. And the point is that there's intelligence, that slime mold learns how to run a maze in a efficient way. It learns. It reacts and changes the course of how it runs the maze to get the food because of who it is. It has intelligence. And the trees learn from each other. The underground networks of information will tell the trees, be careful, there's pests, or here's the water source near the creek, this is where we should go. So the point of that is, we live in an incredible world, and a lot of it we don't appreciate or see because we're too busy, or we are limited by dogmas or that kind of thing. All right, the next question is, do aliens exist? Some people think that they've seen them, or they're spaceships. I read recently that apparently the government is releasing some of the military reports of spaceships that have, you know, crashed, or you've probably seen the videos of pilots who have pictures of crafts doing things that no human aircraft can do. The SETI Institute, S-E-T-I Institute, is a scientific group searching for life in the universe, but they haven't found proof yet. So it's interesting. There's people who think that they communicate with the Pleiadians, or, you know, evolved people from different galaxies, or that they've been abducted. I know people who feel like they've been abducted and experimented on. So I guess my feeling is common sense can be limiting. Okay, another question in the Kids' Deep Questions in Photos book is, what happens after death? The answer, ancient Egyptians believed life continues, so they built pyramids for the dead to give them a place to live with their favorite things around them. Thousands of people who've had a near-death experience during something like an accident or medical procedure report being greeted by a loving being of light who reviews the person's life to see what to be proud of and what could have been done differently. These millions of people who've had near-death experiences are convinced that our spirit continues after death. Most religions agree that the spirit lives on and that we're responsible for our actions. Atheists think that our bodies die and that's it. We'll know for sure at the end of our lives. So one of the people that I interviewed and is on my YouTube channel is Eben Alexander, and he is a physician. He was a top brain surgeon at Harvard Medical, and he had some kind of encephalitis where he said his brain turned to pus. So he was in a coma for almost 2 weeks. I think I've forgotten the exact length of the coma. But during this experience, during his NDE, he visited different realms. He was kind of guided by his biological sister, who was on the other side, because he was adopted by the Alexanders. But his sister, who he saw as kind of like butterfly wings, guided him around. And what's interesting to me is his experiences, what he perceived on these other dimensions, were very similar to Robert Monroe. And Robert Monroe was a conservative Virginia businessman. And he one time was aware of looking down on his body in bed. So he was astral traveling. And he thought, whoa, this is an interesting experience. And so he started to develop a technique to teach people how to astral travel. And he used binaural brain tones. So you put on headphones and it activates right brain, left brain, right brain, left brain. And so the Monroe Institute teaches people how to have these kind of experiences. And the reason I bring it up is because his experiences, what he saw in the other dimensions, was really like what Eben Alexander experienced. And I asked Eben Alexander if he knew anything about Robert Monroe. He said no. At the time of the coma, you know, he was a straight, you know, conservative Harvard brain surgeon. He wouldn't be reading Robert Monroe's theory about how to astral travel. Another thing that Robert Monroe said that was interesting is that he visited, this is really far out, he visited part of his spirit in another body. It was kind of Robert Monroe in another body, in another dimension. And he said the physics principles and all that were completely different. And he said he kind of got in that guy's body and did inappropriate things that didn't fit in that culture. So he realized he wouldn't, you know, that was the wrong thing to do, and he wouldn't do that again. Robert Monroe also said that people, and this is online of our theme of our beliefs, our thoughts create reality for us. He said people's views of what the afterlife is like, they kind of create that. So if you're a member of Church Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and think that you have physical houses and that God has a wife and a form, and that you go there and live with your wife on from this life that continues your family on the other life, then they create that. And Robert Monroe said people who were addicts, he saw, you know, they were addicted to drugs or something like that. He saw them in kind of a pile of just desire, kind of all swarming together, governed by their passions. But the main experiences that people say with their NDE is they go through a tunnel of light. They're created by a being of love, sometimes by their relatives. And some of the visionary scientists that I interviewed for my visionary scientists trilogy said that occasionally there'll be a dog, like a family dog will be able to greet them. I said, are there any cats? And this was a guy named Peter Fenwick, who's a physician in England who's done NDE work. Physicians have done it because they have talked with their patients after an NDE. And he said, they've reported a couple cats. So it is 7:00, and you are listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And usually we have peanut butter and jelly time, but Sandra's not here yet. So I will read the appreciations for 7 o'clock. Peanut butter and jelly time is made possible by the generous contributions of KCFR supporters and by the Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to